Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, April 9th, 2015. It's almost exactly 2:30 UTC as we're starting this. I am Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hello.
You know, and we're you know, just the usual catch up at the beginning. I just want to say, I'm kind of running on fumes here. I had to get up at 3 in the morning today. I had something work related. There was a launch of something, whatever, blah, 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 that I had to pay some attention to. So okay. I had to get up at 3 in the morning and pay attention to this thing for a couple hours, then go to work for an 8 a.m. meeting. And so, like, you know, I'm pretty close to done at this point. You know,
I could empathize. Okay. Yeah,
local time here where I am, it's 7:30 p.m., which, you know, is not all that late in the scheme of things. But when you go to bed at midnight and get up at 3 in the morning, it feels late.
Right.
You know, so anyway, anything interesting from your side? Did you get up at 3 in the morning?
I did not get into three in the morning, but everybody in this house spent the weekend sick. I don't know if I think I mentioned last week that I had to take my son to the ER in a previous. My son's bug. My mom that was here at helping us caught it. Myself, my wife. And I spent basically from Thursday, like around 11 o'clock. Until like Sunday, basically sitting on my throne.
Excellent. That sounds lovely.
It was just miserable. And I really caught the worst of it, like, from everybody. So yeah,
as we joked about it when Ebola was going around, I'm glad I can't catch things over Skype.
Thank God. Jesus.
Yeah.
So I didn't have an enjoyable like Easter weekend. I mean, we're just sick.
We did the thing that we've got my mother's college roommate turns out to live a little ways from here, and every Easter since my mom got here, they have invited us over for like this big family Easter egg hunt thing they have. They have like a fairly substantial plot of land. It's not quite a farm, but they've got like, you know, little sections of it that are sort of mini farms, and they've got a huge area. Like I forget how it's like, you know, it's fairly big.
A lot of space.
Anyway, so they have this annual Easter egg hunt thing, and they've invited us over the last few years, and they, you know, the whole family goes out. They hide like hundreds of eggs, and then the whole family goes out, like all of the, you know, all of their grandkids, and, you know, so a bunch of cousins and blah, blah, blah. And they've invited us, and it's been a lot of fun that we go out there and we find the eggs, and they have candy inside, and it's cool. So, I mean, that's what we did.
Well, so you had fun, you know?
Yeah, I had fun. Alex had fun. Amy had fun. You know,
my son basically was like without energy up until like, I mean, the whole weekend. I mean, he was just, the poor kid was just, the thing had him wiped. I mean, he didn't really start eating again. I mean, it took him about a week.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
Anyway, hope everybody feels better soon. We've got a show coming up. As has been the pattern recently, we've got three major sections. This week, they're going to be on the Iran deal, on the Rand Paul presidential announcement, the new shooting in South Carolina, and we'll probably riff onto the general topic of police violence and racism and all of these sorts of things. And then after those three, we'll have another lightning round. We got long list of thingies, and we'll do a few of them, but we'll cap it at 15 minutes. However much we can talk in 15 minutes.
15 minutes. That's it. We're try to stay tight on the time.
That's right. So that's it for, you know, our little intro. We will come back after this message and talk a little bit about Iran. Back after this. Hey, you, listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or
perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme, and Yvonne is at imbo. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets, so get right on that.
Okay, we're back. And Iran. So we talked briefly about, we talked about this last week. I think it was one in the lightning round.
Yeah.
And we basically said we thought there'd be a deal. We thought it would be sort of vague and kick the can down the road to the next deadline in June. And it did kind of do this, but it actually had a lot more detail than people expected.
You know, the other day, somebody drew a cartoon about the framework of the deal. They said that they showed this very crooked building, and they showed this would be considered bad in architecture.
And, right. Yes.
Okay. And then they showed the same crooked building, and this is diplomacy. The reality is that that is diplomacy. Okay. It's not architecture. Okay. I mean, all negotiations and diplomacy are like this. You know, look, I today got a marked up contract from a customer, two of them actually, from the same customer. And my God, I mean, I felt like, I swear to God, I was like, I looked at him, and I think that's what I felt like. Now I know how the Secretary of State feels when they get markups back. I mean, this thing, there's so many areas that I got to sit down and like reach a compromise, okay, on. But that's what a negotiation is, okay? And, you know, you get a framework to a certain extent. Yeah, of course, it's not going to look pretty, but that's, you know, it's like a lot of the negotiations in life, marriage, you know, business, whatever. I mean, you know, they're not, you know, perfectly scientific, you know, lined up things that, you know, work against maths and stuff and whatever. This is what you get. But, you know, if we're going to start, you know, we're going to get a start somewhere. We got to get a start in something, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. I mean, as could be completely expected by this. Well, actually, reaction wise, first of all, most of sort of your liberal type folks looking at this were actually surprised and felt that this actually got more than they expected out of the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, longer time frames, greater inspection regimes, more restrictions on centrifuges, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, of course, conservatives who looked at it basically completely freaked out because it's like it's giving away the store. They get to keep their nuclear program, blah, 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 blah.
Well, because it wasn't a complete capitulation. I mean, they keep forgetting it's a negotiation. Anyway.
Well, yeah. And you mentioned that in sort of our prep before we started, and I think you tweeted an article on this as well, that the Israelis actually came out with if you must have a deal,
right,
this is what it should look like.
And I'm like, really, assholes? Now? You know? I'm like, come on. How do you take that seriously?
Well, do you remember, because I remember seeing that they made this proposal and looking at it briefly and thinking, well, there's really, I mean, they are asking for a little bit more, but basically we're talking about the same type of outline here.
Yes. Yes.
So,
even more infuriating the way that they have been behaving over this thing.
Yes. Well, and I think we agree. I mean, what they really want is for nobody to be talking to the Iranians, for sanctions to remain indefinitely, and to keep it as, the Iranians are the big bad evil, and we'll starve them until they, like you said, until they capitulate. And I mean, I don't know what they really expect here. Are the Iranians suddenly going to be like, it's been 30 years. we suddenly decide that, we should recognize Israel's right to exist, and we don't want nuclear weapons, and we don't want a peaceful nuclear program either. And, while we're at it, we don't even want a military, and let's have democratic elections, and we're not going to be Islamic anymore.
They do have
democratic. I know, they have democratic elections, but the candidates have to be pre-approved by the Supreme Leader before they can run.
But they're a hell of a lot more democratic than a lot of other places in the Middle East.
Yes. Speaking of, like, for instance, Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Who's our friend.
Yes.
Like, I mean, in almost everything, if you look objectively at, well, what do the Iranians do versus what do the Saudi Arabians do? The Saudi Arabians are worse.
Yes.
In almost every single thing you can look at. So, I don't know. I think the fact that the Israelis are now, well, a deal should look like this, is a significant movement for them. But, it's as you said, it's at a point it doesn't really matter anymore.
Right.
The real question here is going to continue to be, there are a couple things. One, of course, this is a framework. They have to get to the real deal in June. There's a lot of details. Everybody agrees that the details matter, and it's still going to get.
I agree that details matter,
but it's still going to be hard to get from here to there. But
listen, the fact that they were able to get to that level of a framework, I think makes it. A lot more likely that they will.
Well, yeah, like I said at the beginning here, this is what they came up with. Everybody expected that they would come up with something to kick the can down the road to June, but it would be incredibly vague, lack, all of the specifics, have all kinds of room for interpretation. Of course, that's three ways of saying the same thing, but... yes, people say I'm too verbose because of that. But in reality, it was pretty darn specific. It listed out a couple things. Now, of course, a number of people have pointed out that when you hear the Iranians describe it and when you hear the Americans describe it, it's not quite exactly the same, but pretty close. And sort of if you're against
if in diplomacy, you've got two sides that after a deal describe the stuff pretty close. That's not that bad.
Yeah, well, and you've got the of course, if you're a critic of the deal, then you describe them as completely and totally different. They're saying things that are completely and totally different. But, from sort of the calmer people I've heard talking about this, even those that are somewhat dubious about the deal, they recognize that, they're describing it a little bit differently, but both of them are essentially describing the same thing, but spinning it for their domestic audiences.
Absolutely.
That's what you expect.
Standard operating procedure.
Yeah, you'd be shocked if it was anything different.
Right.
But, the other part besides, can you get to the deal in June that I was going to mention, is, of course, going to continue to be, can Obama do the implementation of this in such a way that he can do it without Congress and potentially over Congress's objections, without scaring off the Iranians in the process.
We've done arms monitoring deals like these before without congressional approval.
Oh no, I know. But like the questions here are: if you have the House and the Senate both voting things into law that try to say, or I should say voting for things that try to slow this down or stop it or whatever, even if you have Obama vetoing and they can't override the veto, even with that, it weakens the political position. And also, going back to the letter that the Republicans sent, if you've got a whole bunch of the Republican presidential candidates saying, you know, if I get elected, I'm undoing this the first day I'm in there, that's all stuff that's going to make the Iranians nervous about. Can we trust this? But now I would say even then, the answer is if
That's joke from an old movie. No, anyway,
if you're going to do that, the answer is 42.
Okay, 42. Okay, all right.
But anyway, you've got the reality that if Obama and Iran come to a deal in June, and you've got a year and a half of that deal, potentially accompanied by the UN Security Council repealing some of its resolutions that were affecting Iran.
Yeah.
Then whoever comes in next is going to have a really hard time actually putting that genie back in the bottle.
Oh, I totally agree.
I mean, while theoretically they could, it's going to be really tough. And if that year and a half is going well, it's going to be almost impossible for them.
I hear you.
Now, of course, meanwhile, if the year and a half goes badly, Obama himself might undo it before the end of the year and a half. If Iran is flagrantly violating things, etc. But if it goes well, whoever comes next, even if it's the Republican that's most vigorously against this, they're going to have a hard time undoing it, because it's not just us either. It's the rest of the P5+1. So even if we suddenly decided, oh, okay, we're going to enforce sanctions again, if Europe's not with us, if Russia's not with us, then it's not going to be effective anyway.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But, okay. We're out of our 10 minutes. Do you have
anything else
to wrap up?
No. I think we covered it.
Okay. We're going to take a break. And we will be back after this.
Information.
Okay, we're back. So we had our second major candidate jump into the presidential election race officially. And this is going to speed way up, by the way. I think we've got one, maybe two of these candidate announcements scheduled for next week. Hillary Clinton, various reports, opened a campaign headquarters or signed a lease on a campaign headquarters in Brooklyn, which, if that is in fact true, starts a 15-day clock with the FEC for her to officially announce, which would mean that she has to announce by April 15th, which is only a few days away. Which, if she does, by the way, means I will be wrong on my prediction that she would announce in May. By a couple goddamn weeks.
just love it. Anyway.
Anyway, we're going to have a bunch of this, and we may not dedicate a whole segment to every single one of them, but I think when one of the majors, when somebody interesting makes the announcement, we'll talk about it. Rand Paul announced this week, officially, everybody knew it was coming. And I think his case is interesting to talk about in a few different ways. One is just the sort of it highlights again the divisions within the Republican Party, and specifically there's seemingly a trend where younger millennialish type voters are more, have more of a libertarian bent than their elders. And so that group is growing over time as a percentage of the electorate. And so I believe my prediction at the end of the last presidential cycle was that Rand Paul would run and he would do better than Ron Paul in the primary process, but he would not win. But he'd do better. And that, you know, talk to me again in 2020 or 2024 to see if that continues to increase over time. I think I'm still sticking with that for the moment. However, there have been a number of signs that he may not, he may actually not do as well as his father did, because of a few factors that are interesting here. One, is that unlike his father, he has been making a number of tactical moves towards regular Republicans, let's say, or towards more conservative Republicans.
Such as, for example?
He used to have a reputation of being very much an isolationist, cutting the military budget, reducing foreign aid to everyone, including Israel, a number of things like that. Over the last few months, he's been saying that he wants to be tough on ISIS. He won't cut aid to Israel. You know, he's okay with a fairly large defense budget at this time, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there are all kinds of things he's not compromising in. He's still very much, you know, anti NSA surveillance state. He thinks all of that stuff has gone way too far and would roll it back. So he's certainly not suddenly becoming, you know, one of these other Republicans. He's still got a very unique bent to himself. But there have been a number of polls that have been basically showing that because he hasn't been sort of towing a purish libertarian line, he's actually losing a significant fraction of the Ron Paul supporters. And those people who are oriented along very much along that line. Another example, he's not for completely legalizing drugs and ending the drug war. He's for reducing it a little bit, but he hasn't taken the same hardline stand. There are a number of other things like that, some of which are just, you know, he's more moderate than his father was to begin with. Others of which seem to be opinions he has strategically shifted over the last year or so, in order to potentially court more folks. The other part...
He's pulling a McCain, you mean?
He's pulling a McCain. Yeah, he's pulling a McCain where he had a number of things that made him unique and maverick-y or whatever.
And
he's
now
moderating
he's just,
all of those to try to, try to appeal to the party as a whole, and specifically to primary goers, which is the other interesting part of this. That, you know, because most of his support seems to be amongst young people and who people who aren't otherwise completely wedded to the Republican Party. These are the people who tend to be less likely to show up in primaries and caucuses.
You know, this is such a role reversal for the Republicans, okay? 20 years ago, 25 years ago, it was the Democrats who used to have to do this. The Democrats would get a really very lefty liberal guy or a guy who was more mainstream or whatever. And then the guy for the campaign, in order to get the grassroots, had to go way left and had to capture those guys, you know, in order to make sure that he got the nomination. And, you know, you wound up guys with like Walter Mondale or like Dukakis, and then you wound up
– McGovern
or whatever. You wound up freaking floundering in the election. The Democrats, when you go see the people that are running,
middle. You could argue that Carter was in that mold too, and the only reason he won was because of, you know, after Nixon,
right? Exactly.
I mean, and you know, yes, Ford was there, but he wasn't all that. Ford lost a lot of his popularity when he pardoned Nixon, and so, you know, people were just sick of the Republicans at that point. Otherwise, Carter probably would have lost too.
Exactly. And so you wound up with that. And the Republicans had mainstream guys, you know, whatever, that, you know, didn't have to do this. And now it's complete role reversal. The Democrats usually get a whole bunch of middle-of-the-road guys that don't have to do any of that. And the Republicans just – I mean, It's crazy. They have to get all these guys that have to pander to all these groups in such a way. It's like crazy. And they're from, you know, all these candidates. I mean, I remember like years ago, you had the first candidate. What the hell election was it that was it Lamar Alexander ran, for example? Mm. He was the first one to announce. I can't remember for which campaign that was.
Yeah, I
think it was for I'm pretty sure. Actually, I can't remember. I think it was for 2000.
Okay.
It was Lamar. And, you know, Lamar was one of these centrist guys. He's one of the first candidates to announce. Type of guy that I'm talking
about.
Well,
I mean, this, the same kind of situation happened more recently with John Huntsman.
Right. And now, what do you got that's the first announcers? Whack jobs. All of them. Cruz, Paul. I mean, what the hell, man?
Well, on Paul... you know, and I know some of our loyal listeners, Bruce, are big Rand Paul supporters. And I honestly, if I look at all the Republicans, of all the Republicans, he's definitely, if I was going to choose a Republican, it would be Rand Paul over these other guys, I think. Although maybe I'll think about Bush a little bit. But, you know, look, I was talking to somebody the other day on Facebook about it, actually, and I said, how would I summarize sort of my feeling about the Pauls in general? Is that they are an interesting mix of some viewpoints where when they say it, I'm like, oh my God, they're so right. I am so glad somebody is talking about it and voicing that opinion, because nobody else is talking about that. Nobody else is saying it, and it really needs to be said, and they are 100% right. It's an interesting mix of that and, oh my God, what the hell are they saying? What planet and or century are they from?
Right.
And you've got this interesting mix there.
Yeah.
You know, of these two things. And, you know, and I didn't come prepared to list which issues were in which category, but, you know, but you get that mix there, and it's kind of funny. But I also think it would be wonderful if you had somebody like a Rand Paul actually win the Republican nomination, because it would make for an incredibly interesting general election, because you'd actually have Rand Paul being, you know, the dove on foreign policy versus Hillary Clinton being the hawk, which is a Republican-Democrat role reversal as well, and on a bunch of other...
But he would lose miserably, no, so okay?
Wait. Here's actually the thing. Because, you know, for a long time, I thought, yeah, that sounds right. But actually, the polling doesn't bear that out. And
the polling right now doesn't bear that out because a lot of people don't know who the hell he is.
Well, not just that. Well, yeah, and I do believe that there are a lot of things where in the heat of a campaign, there are things that would come out that are negative that would move people.
Yes!
However, so far, polls have repeatedly borne this out, that of the Republicans, Paul and to a lesser extent Bush, but Paul more so than any of the others has greater resonance among independents and Democrats to actually consider him because of his views on certain issues. And so, for instance, if you know, I track the I track the top five best polled candidates so far in terms of these state by state elections.
Yeah.
So far of those top five, which by the way are Paul, Bush, Christie, Huckabee, and Ryan.
Yeah.
Because you know people like Walker and Cruz haven't had enough good polling yet.
Mm-hmm.
Two of those are first of all of them. Clinton wins against all of them. However, only two of those are doing better than Romney did, and those two are Paul and Bush.
Look, I get that, but here's the problem, okay? The positions that you have talked about a whole bunch, like, for example, the whole thing about foreign policy is anathema to a big core of the Republican Party. Well, there is no freaking way the guy can win with that position.
Well, as I said, it would be – I don't think he can win the Republican nomination. There are not enough Republicans that are in that point of view. I think it would be a wonderful general election. Clinton versus Paul would.
There's no way happening.
I know. I am stating outright. I don't think Paul can win the nomination. I'm just saying that if he could, it would be an incredibly interesting general election because you'd have all kinds of issues that would be scrambled from the normal Republican-Democrat divide, and it would be a realignment of how people vote and think about these issues versus the parties, because on so many issues, Paul is in a very different position than the traditional Republican position, even though he is moderating, not moderating, but moving closer to the Republicans in order to try to be competitive in the primaries. And Clinton also is, you know, a more conservative Democrat, despite everybody who's going to paint her as liberal, 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 liberal. She's more conservative than Obama.
She's a very conservative Democrat. Absolutely. Yes, she's a very conservative. Totally agree.
And so... I just think it would be interesting. Now, again, in the primaries, I think the bottom line is there is not a big enough constituency within the Republican Party this election cycle, and maybe that'll change in 20 years, 10 years even, but right now there's not a big enough constituency for a Paul to pull it off. And the question is going to be, can he grow on what his father did and set himself up to try again in 2020.
Or will he go whack job and basically alienate even more people and basically torpedo himself, kind of like what was his name that went crazy in that that primary against Hillary? The guy that was like yelling.
Oh, that was before the primary against Hillary. That you're talking Howard Dean.
Yes.
Yeah, that was before that, but yeah.
Right. But maybe he'll go Howard Dean.
Well, you know, I there are some things about his temper and some other things that have been getting him in trouble. But no, I think his real risk here is that he tries to move to better match the Republican primary voting group, and in the process. A lot of the folks who would otherwise be inclined to vote for him actually stay home. I don't think they'd really go for other Republicans, but they might stay home and say, you know, Rand Paul isn't the guy I thought he was. Now, on the other hand, you know, a lot of people might be savvy enough to say, he's lying. He's lying to get the nomination, and I believe he really believes what he does.
I don't know.
I tweeted this morning that, you know, my axiom of evaluating political candidates, not for actual politics and who's going to win and who's going to lose, but in terms of what they believe, is don't pay any attention to anything they say or do in the 2 years before the election.
You got to look at what they believed before they got into power, basically.
Before they seriously started thinking about running, because then they were actually acting according to their closer to their true beliefs. Of course, all of these politicians have been running for one thing or another forever. But you know, specifically in presidential elections, about 2 years before the election, they will start positioning themselves for the election. And this goes for Clinton, this goes for Paul, this goes for Bush, it goes for every single one of them. They'll start positioning themselves for the election. And so you can't really believe anything they're saying or doing, because everything's done in that context. Whereas before then, maybe they were showing their true colors. And so I don't know. I think you can apply that to Paul as well. Also, the thing is that in order to really have a good chance, he needs to be bringing in people who would not normally vote in the primaries and caucuses and bring them in to vote. And the question is, will he be able to do that?
Not if he starts shifting his positions to more mainstream positions or like different positions to start attracting voters is the point. I mean, if the whole thing that you meant about bringing in a new candidate, new people to Republican Party was because the positions like the dovishness on foreign policy or other stuff like that. And if he starts like already backpedaling on that shit, okay, well then how's he going to attract those people? Well, it kind of just doesn't work that way.
Well, and you know, there's a question of, you know, where can you finesse that so that you can bring one of the things that I retweeted as well was somebody, and I forget who it was. You can go look at my Twitter stream, who said that the very distinct difference between Cruz's announcement speech and Paul's announcement speech Cruz was very much playing to the base and going for ideological purity, and I want the conservative base to come to support me. I want the religious base to support me. Rand Paul was all about trying to reach out to groups who traditionally have not voted Republican. And whether and or not he'll be successful
did he blow
at that.
Up? Did Rand Paul blow up on the Today Show like yesterday or something?
Well, as I said, he's had an issue with his temper. There have been a number of interviews, including one yesterday, where, you know, he was being asked questions and he kind of snaps at the reporter and, you know, and has not reacted smoothly to that. And yeah, that kind of stuff ends up looking bad.
You're too. Like blowing up at frickin' Savannah Guthrie. I mean, really? How is that playing? I mean, come on.
So we'll see how he does. And as I said, you know, each election cycle, I decide whether I'm going to participate in the Republican or the Democratic primary and caucus thing based on which one is most interesting, not by which one I have the most loyalty to, because I don't really have loyalty to either one of them. You know, if I end up participating in the Republican process this time, of all the Republicans I've seen right now, Paul's probably the one that I would go for. Although I'll be honest, I would consider Bush. There are a few things. Again, this is amongst Republicans. I honestly think I would probably have trouble voting for any of these guys in a general election. But of course, I'm going to have my usual dilemma because I'm going to have trouble thinking about voting for Clinton either, assuming she wins the nomination, because there's a lot I don't like about her. So I anticipate it's going to be another one of these elections where I'm like, my God, they all suck. And then I have to decide what to do. And we'll see if there's a third party candidate that makes me happy or whatever. But I hate it when that's a situation, but it's almost always the situation for me. But anyway, I think that's enough. I think it'll be very interesting to watch Paul run. I think it'll be more interesting than watching Cruz run, because he brings up more interesting divisions in the Republican Party.
Cruz is moron. I mean, let's face it. He's whatever. I mean, you know. So yeah, it's gonna be a lot more interesting.
Yeah. And we got a bunch of these guys. Like, I said, a bunch of them are announcing in the next few weeks. I think the next one that's actually got something scheduled is Rubio. I think maybe like in a few days.
Yep, I hear that Rubio's. Yep, announcing. Yep.
So anyway, we're way over time. We're going to stop and we'll move on to our next topic after this. Back after, well, I already said after this.
After this. That stuff. Right. Yes.
And we're here again. Another black guy was shot and killed.
Yep.
It seems like this is every week. Now, one of the things I'll point out before we talk about this in more detail, this specific case, is that whenever we have one of these big incidents, this one was sort of kicked off by Ferguson. But, you know, going back to other things, we had the kids killed in Sandy Hook. We had a number of other incidents. It suddenly seems like in the weeks and months following that there are a lot more of those kinds of things happening than there were. The reality is that's not true. The reality is that once one event happens that's really big, news agencies and everybody else are paying more attention, looking for more examples like that.
Well, true.
Since Ferguson, we've heard about six or seven of these cases. That's not to say that in the months before Ferguson, there weren't just as many. It's just they're getting more attention now. And I think they probably deserve more attention than they were received before. But we shouldn't read the a trend into it. We should just read the fact that we're paying more attention to it now, and maybe we should have always been paying more attention.
But the difference in this one also is the fact that, like in some others, if we didn't have the video, we wouldn't have been paying attention. We wouldn't have been listening.
That's been true of several of these. I mean, we had that kid shot on the playground. We got the person shot in the Walmart.
Right.
We had the I can't breathe guy. We've had video in several of these cases. The one difference in this one is that they are charging the cop with murder. Because
the officer like lied through his teeth.
Yeah, it's very interesting. If you look, apparently, like before the video came to light, the police were already putting out statements about how he was afraid for his life. The guy was going for his gun, you know, blah 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 blah.
For his taser.
Then the video comes out, and it's like none of that happened.
No, the guy was like running away from him, and he just started shooting at him.
And keep in mind, this is also, the guy was stopped for a broken taillight.
Right!
Now, the guy apparently probably ran because he'd had encounters with the cops before that went badly. There might have been a child support issue. But, you know, in the end, none of that freaking matters.
He didn't have a gun. He wasn't violent. He wasn't reaching for anything. I mean, there's no reason to
There's absolutely nothing in that video that indicates that, you know, deadly force was warranted. Hell, it probably doesn't even warrant him being chased after.
Yes. You got the guy. You know the car. You could have gone to his house and arrest him. It's not like, you know, if there was an issue, there's... I don't know. Look, I think the position we were talking about something before the show about this. Look, in every job, in every situation, in everybody, especially in people of authority, people with authority will do bad things. But some people with authority also do a lot of good things. I mean, I've been in the presence of a lot of cops doing good things. Okay.
I mean, frankly, this goes back to, I mean, if you remember the famous psychological experiment where they took a bunch of college kids and made half of them prisoners and half of them prison guards. And within 48 hours, the people who'd been assigned randomly to be guards were acting violently against the prisoners and doing all sorts of things to dehumanize them, abuse them, etc. And they had to call off the experiment because it got so damn bad. Mm. You know, and it's a famous psychological result. And this is why you need strong controls on power.
Right. Which is I am for 100%.
Well, and also, you know,
carry like body cams 24/7. Yep. And every one of their actions
Some of these cities who've rolled out the body cams have equipped them with an off switch, and come on.
Yeah.
They are completely irrelevant if the officer has the ability to turn them off.
No. They can't be turned off, period.
Right.
You know?
And look, in this situation, as with several of these other recent situations, like I believe the kid who was killed in a playground is one of the examples of this. When they looked into it, the cop in question had a record of bad behavior, had a record of excessive force. And you got to get rid of these people.
Yeah.
You know, you have to build a culture from the very top to bottom that... You know, how should the police handle situations like this? De-escalate whenever possible. You know,
There's been a history about about a couple of departments that have already installed these, in the method that you described, for example, and how those departments that have those body cams installed, those kinds of incidents go down dramatically. Dramatically.
Like 80% reduction.
Yes.
Things along those lines.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, and people have pointed out there are all kinds of privacy concerns about every cop recording video the whole time they're on duty and all of the people they pass by in other interactions. So you have to have controls on that too. You know, on how and where these videos are used. But I think the having something like that in place is absolutely crucial. If you are playing a public role like that, you should be accountable for every minute you're on duty.
Yeah. When you're on duty, absolutely. Yes.
And, yeah.
There are security cameras at my job, and there have been other companies where I worked where there are security cameras. It's not an unreasonable thing. If you go to most retail stores, banks, places where you deal with like sensitive stuff, you will be recorded all of your time while you're working. It is part of the job. And I don't see why this is any different for a police officer to have to record all of his actions in order to, basically mitigate any disputes as to what happened.
Right. And also, I should say, one thing that police in many parts of the country try to pretend like this isn't true, but in all 50 states, it is legal for you to videotape a cop engaging in their duty. As long as you are not physically interfering with them and what they are doing.
Correct.
So that should be hammered in to, at every level, that it is absolutely legal and for that matter should be encouraged, that if you are seeing an interaction between a police officer and a civilian, you should be whipping out your cell phone and recording it.
Yep.
Because you never know. Now, of course, people point out, 99% of cops are good cops and whatever. And okay, probably. That doesn't matter. We've got a systematic problem with the ones that aren't.
Right.
And so we have to figure out a way to deal with it. And yes, there is a racial component to it. The statistics bear that out time and time again. All across the country, it is the rule rather than the exception that there are significant racial disparities in terms of how the laws are carried out, how police officers react to the public. And this is a serious issue that we need to figure out how to deal with.
Listen, the other day, Jerry Seinfeld has this show called Comedians Having Coffee with Cars, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay? I know what you're going to talk about.
And so apparently Jerry was driving fast and he was riding with Chris Rock and they got pulled over. Okay. All right. Well, it happens to be that Chris Rock tweeted over the last 45 days, Chris Rock has been pulled over by the cops like 3 times.
Yeah.
And he wasn't speeding.
And he. Okay. At least one instance, he admitted he was speeding a little bit, but he started posting on Instagram. Posting
selfies every time he gets pulled over.
Yep.
And it's like, I mean, come on, really?
Well, there was this other case, if you remember, speaking of Chris Rock, who probably drives a really nice car.
Yes.
There was another black person who was pulled over for, I forget what his offense was, speeding or something, driving a really nice car was shot during the traffic stop as well and killed. And, and from all reports, there was no video of that one, but from all reports, he wasn't, actually, is certainly not doing anything to deserve to be shot. You know, it's like, come on, guys. And which also brings up, I've mentioned a couple of times on this show too, other countries have shown that it shouldn't necessarily be necessary for the default to be that every police officer always has their gun on them. We could get away with a situation where the guns have the cops have the firearms in the trunk of their car and get them out when they need them.
Now, I'm not going to jump to that because we have so many people with guns. And the other day, I've seen the opposite video as well.
Yeah.
There was a video that was posted in the news. This cop that went over and he had actually a body cam, recorded it. He's having a conversation with a suspect, and he kept asking the guy, dude, are you sure you don't have a gun? No, I don't. All of a sudden, the guy just pulled out a gun and freaking blew his brains out, on video. And so, look, I get that. Their job is dangerous as well, okay?
All I'm saying is that probably, probably 90% of the cases where...
I think a lot of times they could do with the taser.
They could probably do without having the gun on them. And when they're going...
If it's a traffic stop or something like that. When they're going into a
known dangerous situation, they can get their firearm out. Also, I mean, I think we got to change the balance of opinion here that says, you know, okay, I want cops to be safe too when they're doing their job properly. But is it really okay for us to say that it's okay for us to kill hundreds of people, for cops to kill hundreds of people a year to avoid, you know, perhaps a handful of police deaths? I mean, there's a trade-off there, but, you know, we're killing too many innocent people in these kinds of incidents. And we got to readjust this balance.
Agreed. All right, so we're out of time.
We're out of time. Anything to wrap up?
No.
Okay, we're going to come back with a lightning round. Very, very, very exciting. We'll be back right after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. And we're back. It's lightning round time. We're going to take turns, 1-minute rounds for 15 minutes. And, yeah, I know, very exciting. I'm going to start this time. Boom! We had feedback. We had feedback from Jen, who had not listened to the show in a while, but came back. And so, the comments. Yesterday, I discovered that catching up with Curmudgeon's Corner is possibly the best Friday afternoon activity ever.
Wow! Damn!
Exactly. There you go. So that's comment number one.
Okay.
And then she said, but I do shockingly have some comments.
Okay.
Comment number one. The cursing montage is possibly my favorite thing ever.
I must admit that was quite hilarious.
Comment number two, episode 400, lightning round. You say, she means me, extroverts are a pariah on the world. Really? And her husband apparently said, some of us introverts disagree. So just to defend myself slightly, first of all, yes, of course it was a joke. Second, though, I was referring specifically to the world of politics, and I actually think a good dose of introverts would probably do good, because a lot of extroverts are really, you know, the same type of people who, you know,
wind up banging hookers and, you know, and like interns.
Well, yes, but also they're you know, you have this whole rush into things, you know, make decision first, think later kind of thing that often
that's
happens.
That's not an extrovert. That's an idiot.
Okay, true.
Don't confuse the two.
True. But you have, I think, a good healthy dose of introverts would help a lot of political institutions. That's all I'm really saying. And yeah, we don't have to kill all the extroverts.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Okay. Your turn.
I will go with Snowden and Oliver. So, okay. So, John Oliver is having the show on HBO, which, by the way, I have not watched a full show, but I've watched significant clips of it, okay? It's quite good. did a really good interview of Edward Snowden out in Russia.
Yep.
At first, it didn't seem like Snowden would show up, but damn, he showed up. My conclusion was I feel sorry for the guy, man. I mean, you could tell the guy really would like to come home, and he can't really figure out how. And I think that he is disappointed. I think I could tell that he's disappointed by a couple of things. I mean, one, the fact that apparently you can see John did what we said. Nobody cares. And oh, my God, nobody even knows who the hell he is on the street, after everything that he put himself out to. I don't know. My take was that John did a good interview of him, and I personally felt I felt sorry for the poor guy. That's what I came away.
Well, and I know we're over a minute, but before the show started, you ranted a little bit on this, and I just wanted to get at least one more piece of that. You mentioned that you feel that he was really badly served by Glenn Greenwald.
Well, yes, because the reality is that you could tell that the poor guy, he got advised very poorly on what to do, and I just feel that if the reporter had a lot more of his interests instead of the others, he wouldn't have done something like dump 50,000 documents, but just dump relevant documents, which is what John Oliver was the point that he made, which is a point that I have always completely agree with him. He didn't read everything he dumped. He dumped a whole bunch of shit without knowing what the hell he dumped. And then, when people started if he would have been far more selective on what he did, he probably would have been able to figure out a way to not be in the situation where he is right now.
And also, as we've talked about many times, Greenwald has proven himself to just be incredibly sloppy as well. Like, he picks and chooses what he thinks will make his point and doesn't bother to do sort of, even sometimes rudimentary fact checking to make sure he properly understands the context of what he's talking about, what the things means. He'll jump to conclusions, and he seems to have almost zero interest in looking in directions that might show him that he's wrong on certain things, which leads to him overstating the case, which actually ends up undermining it.
Yes.
And we've seen this in a number of cases where the story itself is bad enough, but then if you go and make it out as if it was twice as bad as it really is, and then someone fairly easily proves that what you said
was wrong,
well, then now nobody's taking you seriously anymore.
Seriously.
Whereas if you'd stuck to the part that was 100% true and easily defensible and well-sourced, that would have been a significant story in it of itself, and you wouldn't have been able to have it undermined like that. So I think Greenwald did that time and time again, where he blew something up and spun it in such a way that it just fell apart under close examination. When meanwhile, if he just said the part that was incontrovertible, messed up that word.
Incontrovertible.
Yes. Then it would have held up much better, and it would have actually meant more.
Yes.
But
well,
anyway. Okay. Anyway. My turn. Oh God, I should think about these before I do it. Okay. I just wanted to follow up on something we talked about a long time ago. I had mentioned that my fitness tracker I kept on my arm and never, ever took off. And you went off on me about how gross that was.
Yes.
So I do want to say that based on your feedback, I have been switching it from arm to arm at least once a week.
That's good. I feel better about that.
And by the way, I do the same thing with my wedding ring.
With the bump? Okay.
It goes on one of four different fingers depending on what's going on that day.
Interesting way of method doing it. Okay, all right. I usually, I take it off like a couple of times, during the day, wash my hands, put it back on. That's it.
Yeah, so. I swap hands. I'll also say on the fitness tracker thing, I've now had this Garmin Vivo Fit for a significant chunk of time now. I'm not sure if it's a year yet, but I can definitely say after this time that I preferred the Fitbit I had before it to the Garmin Vivo Fit. The VivaFit's primary advantage is the one-year battery life, but I found the lack of real-time syncing with my phone to be a real killer for the way I used it. But they have come out with a replacement model that does real-time syncing. So, you know, we'll see if I switch to that next time. But there have been a bunch of other Fitbit enhanced ones that have come out in the last year or two. So if and when I replace this, I think this is another one of those things that I won't replace it until it dies. So it may be a while, but I have been disappointed by the original Garmin VivoFit, but it seems like most of the things that annoyed me about it, they've actually fixed in the updated version. Okay. Your turn.
Kenya Massacre. Now, I read a little bit about this. Apparently, like, some guys, I think from, was it from Somalia or from...
From Al-Shabaab, I guess it was, which is based in Somalia.
Right.
But has a lot of influence in the region and has done attacks in Kenya before.
Basically went into a university in Somalia and killed over, what was it, 100 people?
Yeah, it's like 140 or something like that.
You know, the worst thing is that I am like here struggling to get the to give you the details of a massacre of over 100 people when we go and like we flip out over massacres that are far smaller.
Yeah.
In other places.
And, well, and we talked about this before when we were comparing the Charlie Bebo or whatever it was with what was happening in Nigeria at the same time. And we've had other large-scale massacres all over the place.
Yeah.
And they don't get the same attention as if it's happening in, you know, Europe or the United States. And you can understand why that is, but at the same time, you know,
it's not right.
Not right. Yeah, and not to mention, forget about these isolated incidents. You know, when's the last time we actually spent time talking about Syria? There's still, you know, people getting killed every day there. In significant numbers, in horrific ways. And, you know, at a certain point in time, we're just like, okay, Syria's screwed. It is nothing. There's nothing new to say. It's still screwed.
I know. It's pretty bad.
Okay. Next up, my turn again. I just wanted to follow up on this Indiana pizza thing we talked. Well, no, the Indiana law that we talked about last week. One of the examples that came out, it had already started to happen in our last show, but we didn't talk about it, is the media interviewed some random pizza owner who said they wouldn't cater a gay wedding. And so then they started getting all sorts of harassment about that fact, and they were bigots and blah, blah, blah. But then there was a conservative move to do a fundraiser for them, and they got almost $1 million out of it.
Right.
Meanwhile, of course, it turns out nobody ever asked them to cater any wedding, let alone a gay wedding.
But by the way, they didn't say that either. Okay, in their defense, I mean, I didn't see them say that. They were asked a question. Okay, whether they would. Somebody said they said no. That's it.
Yeah. That was basically it. Would you cater a gay wedding? No.
Yeah, that's all that happened.
It all came out of that. And so I thought that was interesting. The other thing that I just wanted to follow up on this as well, and I know I'm out of time, is I think one thing that was somewhat lost in the last conversation was that most of the people who were saying that they actually didn't want to, for instance, provide services to gay weddings were not actually saying they didn't want to serve gay people. For instance, in the cake situations, if the gay person came up and said that they wanted a birthday cake, most of these guys wouldn't object. They would object to making the cake for the gay wedding specifically because the gay wedding violates their sense of morals, whatever. Now, what came up this week as well is there was a situation where somebody went, in order to prove a point, they wanted to have a cake baked that had a caption on it that was a quote from the quote from Leviticus saying, you know, basically how homosexuals were evil. Okay.
Yeah, but you know what?
And it was refused. And then, there was legal opinions pushed on this that actually that's okay. And I'll tell you where I am is I think, you know, I said last time, I really think that people should be able to, even if you say, okay, you can't discriminate against people, you should be able to discriminate against content. And in this
case, that's what they did. They discriminated against content.
Well,
they
said, I mean, which would be the same thing against doing the wedding cake that had two guys on it. You know, I think this has to be like, either you have a law that says you can't choose your customers. If your customer comes to you, you got to serve them, period, end of story. Or you got to say you have the discretion to pick and choose your customers. And if you don't want to serve them, you don't. I think this mix where some things are okay and some things are other is kind of
bullshit. Well, that's for another time. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, next.
Your turn.
Jeez.
We got time for maybe one or two more. Go.
The White House hacked.
Go for it.
Well, I don't know. They kept saying the White House got hacked, but I don't know anything about it. What happened?
So basically, we were talking about that whole State Department email system and Hillary Clinton and all that.
Right.
Well, the State Department's email system has been continuously hacked for a long time. They've had all kinds of security issues there. And apparently the same thing has happened to the White House now. This is supposedly the non-classified network, but the non-classified network was breached apparently by Russians. It's a little bit unclear if it's freelancing Russians or Russians working for the intelligence service, but come on, it's Russians working for the intelligence service. And so the whole question brings up the whole issue of apparently security in the executive branch is just horrible overall. In pretty much all aspects. And, you know, you have these people saying, yeah, don't worry about it. This was just an unclassified system. We have to deal with it, but don't worry, the classified systems were secure. First of all, there was plenty of sensitive information in there, including like the president's detailed daily schedule, things like that. But even aside from that, if they're sloppy with the unclassified system, it makes you wonder about the classified system and how much they, how well they do or how well they don't.
I think it just shows to you that I think that just federal government IT sucks.
Federal government in general absolutely sucks. And, brings up the question again of, you know, should they be using email at all? And if they are using email,
so we're gonna go back to typewriters and memos.
Maybe. But like, and if they are using email, should, you know, there's a very good case to be made that says it really should be internal only. Like, you know, you get into your corporate firewall or your government firewall in this case, I guess, and you do the communication within that network. But email going in and out is suspect. I mean, email is fundamentally insecure. You shouldn't be doing anything that really is critical over the public internet email. You know, it's certainly, you know, none of, I mean, I'm sure there are all kinds of things the government does that's not that sensitive that it doesn't matter. But certainly the State Department, the White House, the Defense Department, come on, you got to do better than this.
All right. And
We're out of time.
All right. So we're out of time. We burnt up an entire, I don't know how long of a thing.
Good.
For an episode. And got feedback and things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so thanks.
Well,
go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say thanks, everybody.
Well, you can do it.
No, you can do it. You do it better than I suck at this.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us yet again. We appreciate you all. We're up to 31 likes on our Facebook page.
Yay!
So please, tell your friends, share us, encourage people to like Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook.
Share our show,
but also share the page to get it in front of more people. The Facebook
and the page. Yes.
You know, so and all of that. Yeah. You know, now, I don't believe that any of the additional shares we got this week were because we're from people listening to the show. Maybe one of them was. I've been slowly inviting my friends. I didn't want to blast everybody at once. I've been doing 10 a day. But, we're getting up there. But anyway, like us on Facebook. As usual, you can also reach me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. And we're both on Twitter. I'm at Abelsmay. Yvonne is at IMBo. We love getting your feedback. We have now had feedback on the show something like 4 weeks in a row, which is awesome. So thank you, everybody. We love your engagement with the show. And, that's about it. Have a great week, everybody. And we'll talk to you again next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.